Welcome to Betrayal Recovery Radio, the official podcast of APSATS, the Association of Partners of Sex Addict Trauma Specialists, hosted by Dr. Jake Porter. APSATS is a nonprofit organization providing professional training and compassionate support to partners affected by problematic sexual behavior and betrayal trauma. In each episode, Dr. Jake guides a conversation of enlightening insights and practical tools to empower those affected by sex addiction and betrayal trauma to use their voices and live their values. The mission of Betrayal Recovery Radio is to offer hope to those in need of healing and growth to those moving through grief. And now, here's your host, Dr. Jake Porter.
Welcome to this episode of Betrayal Recovery Radio. I'm Dr. Jake Porter. And today we're going to have a great conversation with three incredible ladies whose work I admire, who I've gotten to know at various levels, but have enjoyed getting to know each one of them. And I think you're really going to get a lot out of this conversation as well. Today on our show are the three hosts of the Hope for Wives podcast, Lachelle Burkett of Hope Redefined, Bonnie Burns of strongwives.com, and Pam Blizzard of recoveringpeace.com. And these three ladies are friends, they are colleagues, and they have a wonderful podcast. I'll be honest with you guys, I don't listen to a whole lot of podcasts. There's so many good ones out there, it can actually be kind of overwhelming. But I've listened to several episodes now of the Hope for Wives podcast, and I found it to be really well done. They are down to earth. They are practical. They are well informed. They are compassionate. And I think that you're going to really enjoy this conversation that I get to have with them. I invited them on because I like their real talk. I think that they give it to you straight, but they also give it to you with a real foundation of their own professional and personal knowledge about betrayal trauma. So that's what is in store for you today on this episode of Betrayal Recovery Radio. Before we turn our attention to that conversation, I do want to let you know about a few things going on with APSATS, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists. Right now, as this very episode is being released, the Multidimensional Partner Trauma Model Training is taking place. So it's too late to catch this one as it's already started, but there is already another one scheduled with registration already open for November 14th through 17th, live online via Zoom, the Multidimensional Partner Trauma Model Training. If you are a professional, a coach, a clinician who helps to assist those who are working through the aftermath of betrayal trauma, I cannot emphasize how important it is to understand the reality of betrayal trauma and to understand its multiple dimensions. So that's a wonderful training. You'll want to take it if you've never done that before. Also coming up in July 7th, a 1-hour training with the president of APSATS, and that is Sex Addiction Abstinence Contracts with our president, Jeannie, and she will be there talking about what partners and those who work with partners need to know about sex addiction abstinence contracts. And then in September, coming back, a return offering of Betrayed Family Support for Children and Families live online via Zoom with Jessica Edens. So that's a little bit about what's going on with APSATS. Check out those offerings if you have not before. You'll want to get involved with that. And now, without further ado, I turn our attention to my conversation with Pam and Lachelle and Bonnie. All right. Well, welcome, ladies, to the Hope for Wives podcast. It is such a pleasure having you all here. Yes, we have Lachelle Burkett, we have Bonnie Burns and Pam Blizzard joining us here on Betrayal Recovery Radio. The crowd is going wild for you. Thank you so much. long, long anticipated appearance. Thank you all. All right. Well, no, this is a pleasure. I have been looking forward to this for a long time. Yeah, these three ladies are all wonderful individually. They're great together. I'll admit, listen to many podcasts, but I have listened to a handful of the Hope for Wives podcasts and have found it to be great. And I'm excited to get to introduce this audience to the three of you. So what I'm going to do first is I'm just going to go around and ask each of you to introduce yourselves individually or not. I don't care how you do that. You can try to introduce yourselves visually. That would work too. And that the way they can get to know you, and then we'll jump into our conversation for today. So Lachelle, you're first on my screen. Why don't you kick us off? Let the folks know who you are.
All right. So I am Lachelle Burkett. I am I'm the executive director and founder of a ministry called Hope Redefined, but I also serve on the APSATS board, have been on a member of that board since 2021, and get the privilege of working with Bonnie and Pam on this really great project called Hope for Wives, and just get to show up and share whatever we feel like is important for the women that we're trying to support.
Fantastic. Thank you, Lachelle. All mm-hmm. right, Bonnie, you're up next.
Well, I'm Bonnie Burns, and I'm a professionally certified partner coach with APSATS. I also serve on the leadership team of a free Christian resource for wives who are betrayed called the Sarah Society. In addition to that, from my previous life, I teach about healthy, godly sexuality through another podcast called Sex Chat for Christian Wives, which is now trauma informed because I'm there. In addition to seeing betrayed wives individually, I lead a class called Sexual Clarity for Christian Women.
Fantastic. Thank you, Bonnie. Really, really glad to have you here. And last but certainly not least, Miss Pam Blizzard.
Thank you, sir. My name is Pam Blizzard. My website is recoveredpeace.com. I also have a Facebook group that has around 2,000 people membership. It's about 5 years old. I am APSATS trained. I'm also Dora Hope trained. My specialty is teaching boundaries. And also now I'm starting to get into teaching cognitive distortions. And those are two of my favorite subjects because they are incredibly powerful.
Absolutely.
And I feel very blessed to be able to work with Lachelle and Bonnie and to be sort of close to them around here in Knoxville, Tennessee.
That is fantastic. That's awesome. Thank you so much. All right. Well, you know, as I thought about what we might all talk about, I thought with these three ladies, I feel really safe doing which is a compliment to the three of you, doing an episode on hard questions, hard stuff that partners I know often think about and have to think through and get to think through. And so, you know, I have some questions. These are all real questions that I have heard from partners. Most of them I have heard way more than once, maybe all of them I've heard more than once, and they're tough. It's tough stuff. But I want to say this about the three of you ladies, just knowing you through other means, but then also listening to some of your podcasts and to our audience who's listening. One reason I commend this resource to you is I believe these women will not just tell you what you want to hear, but they're going to speak the truth, even if it might be hard to hear, because they really care. And at the same time, they're also going to meet you with incredible compassion and empathy. And so that's why I feel safe going into this stuff. So here we go. Here's my first one. I'm just going to toss it to you and y'all can do with it what you want. So from a betrayed partner, what if my husband absolutely refuses to see a therapist? Who'd like to take that?
We're going to give it to Pam.
Yeah, all right. I was just going to say, I feel really qualified to speak about that from my own personal experience. I think it is so easy to forget that this is an addiction, because it does hit so close to the bone and so close to our heart. And my background and my personal life has a lot of addiction in it. And so I would say the same thing to you that I would say to someone struggling with a partner with a substance addiction or any other process addiction. When your partner won't get the help he needs, you need to go get the help that you need to support you. Living with an addict of any kind will drain you emotionally, psychologically, financially, and they live in an alternate reality of their own making. That's kind of the nature of addiction, is to escape the current reality, and they are going to constantly try to pull you into their reality. And so please get an APSATS trained therapist who will support you and validate you and give you resources. Also get into a group, because you are going to have that influence that you live with in your home that isn't really based in reality or isn't able to connect. You need to be in a group of like-minded people. When I say like-minded, I mean people who are all rowing in the same direction towards truth, towards recovery, towards healing, and other people around to validate your truth, validate your personal reality of your emotions, and to keep you grounded and to connect with. You can connect with people in group. You can be seen and heard and known. And so just starting on that route, which will launch you into other resources, and just really, this is hard. This is so, so hard to take a little bit of distance, healthy, loving, self-compassion first, and then some healthy, loving detachment from your partner. And you can do that with love and compassion and empathy. And having all those other resources around you are going to support you. Please don't try to do this alone. You don't need to.
Yes. Thank you, Pam. So well said. So well said. And I want to thank you for the compassion I could feel from you as you answered that question. And that was great. So here's kind of flipping all the way to, I guess, a whole other potential problem area for partners. Again, from a real partner, who she wrote to me, and she said, "My husband is really trying." You know, she went on, I edited this, but "My husband's really trying. He's going to all the meetings. He's seeing a CSAT. He's doing the groups. He's, you know, he's working the steps. He's sober. He's passing maintenance polygraphs," on and on. Then she wrote, "But I can't move forward." Mm-hmm. What, you know, she was expressing, she doesn't seem to be able to keep moving forward. What should I do is what she wanted to know.
Yeah. So I'm going to jump in and take this one, Jake. Okay. You know, one of the things I love about our podcast that we do is we bring both our professional experience and our personal stories. So sometimes we're speaking from our own mess ups and misses and things we wish we could have done different, and or resources we had when our stories were unfolding. And then the other thing we get to do is talk about the things we've learned over the course of time as we've been educating ourselves in this arena. And I would tell you that this was one of the things that I really wrestled with. I remember saying, "He seems to be getting better, but I'm not getting better. And I don't know what to do with me." And I kept trying to, we have a phrase I use with my coaching clients a lot, is I call it moving into rhinoceros mode, which means I just put my head down and I plow through, hoping that I'm going to get through to the other side and that there's going to be some magical thing that happens in the process of me working harder, or maybe even minimizing or trying to just force myself into a state of I'm getting better. I am better. And so when I read that question and thinking about the woman who sent this to you, immediately my coaching hat came on and I immediately wanted to ask other questions, because I think that one of the biggest mistakes that I made and misunderstandings was that I thought my moving forward and my husband's moving forward was going to look the same. And it didn't.
That's good.
Yeah, it was very different. He was definitely walking in a space of relief. He felt a lot of weight lifted off of him. He had all this new community. So he was making friends. They had jokes. Like, I was like, what in the world? And I'm on the other side and I'm bleeding. But no one knows that I'm bleeding, right? And so I didn't get those necessarily, those new resources for the quote, moving forward. It was a very lonely experience for me. It was very isolated. I was trying to ask people around me what to do, but most people didn't have information or a path to heal. And so that's the one thing I would say first and foremost is that I want her to just be able to know that she can take the pressure off. I think we're always trying to figure out if we're doing it right. And I would say, take the pressure off. Feeling is good, even though it's painful. And that your journey of healing is going to look different than his. And I would add into exactly, just pull in exactly what Pam was just talking about, is that one of the ways that I do get to see women feel like they're moving forward is when they discover safe community, when they can find those groups, they can find those friends to have jokes with, they can find resources now, right, that weren't necessarily available 18 years ago when our story came out. And so that's going to give that woman the opportunity to really understand what is she moving toward? Because I think that oftentimes we just only can see that the marriage has to get back to the way it was. And that's, quote, moving forward. But when you start to get into that healthy community, you start to recognize things like Pam was talking about, which is self-awareness, growing in boundaries, getting our own care taken care of, all those things. And that's just, those are game changers. And so those are the things that I would say to her. And then so that to directly answer her question, what should I do? Find people and don't compare your story to another person. It is one of the most crippling things that we do is comparison.
Yes.
And it takes us out every time. And so finding safe people who are going to let you be right where you are and allow you to make be on the journey. And it doesn't determine, you know, you're too much, you're too little, you're this, you're that. Like, get in that community and be able to do that. And I think you'll quickly start to see yourself moving from a place of maybe feeling stuck to a place of being like, now I've got a map. Now I know I got things I get to do. And they're for me. They're not necessarily for him or our relationship just yet. And or maybe they are. Maybe they are for the relationship because he's able to show up well. So that would be my answer.
That's a great answer. So many good little nuggets in there. You know, compare and despair, absolutely. And you made me think of something that I often say, not just to betrayed partners, but to clients on any place in this story. And that's that stuck. Sometimes we think we're stuck when we're not, because we're using a measure that's maybe not totally legit for whether we're in motion or not. And especially if my measure is I'm doing better, whatever that means, feeling happier, right? Because so often the way forward is a way that's really challenging and hard. Mm-hmm. So that's so well said. Thank you, Lachelle.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So next, you know, we had to ask this on a hard questions episode. Okay. When should we start having sex again?
Well, that will be mine.
I knew it. Come on, Bonnie. Bring it.
All right. All right. So the answer to this, I mean, will be different for every marriage overcoming the impact of sexual betrayal. But the bottom line is when she feels relationally safe enough to start having sex again. And, you know, through time, I've worked with lots of wives and now betrayed wives, and I've seen a pattern here, and it's kind of a spectrum. So I'd like to kind of explain three different scenarios. And great. If you're a listener, yeah. And if you're a listener who doesn't quite resound with any of these scenarios, that's fine too. These are just generalized. So the first is a group of wives who've been sexually neglected for a long time due to his problematic behavior. And so what I hear from these neglected wives is their interest in being sexual with their husbands is in a time frame that's a lot quicker than others, because they've been neglected here, and sexual intimacy is a place where they do feel seen and heard and connected. And that's completely fine. That's her choice. The second group of wives are those who have been pursued relentlessly for sex because their husband has kind of hijacked his arousal with the super stimulus. He's keeping himself, you know, constantly aroused. So if she says no for any reason in the past, if she said no for any reason, she's been probably met with consequences that have been him pouting, him angry, or stonewalling, and it spills over into the whole family, not just her. So after she finds out about his acting out behaviors, typically there's a lot of anger because of the injustice. She realizes she's been wrongfully blamed, and she's wrongfully taken that blame, that she was broken, and she's felt shame that she couldn't keep up with him sexually, but now she knows the truth. So for a wife in this position, when will she want to engage sexually? Well, again, it's when she feels relationally safe to choose to do that. And so what I would offer to her in assessing when is she safe enough? Oh, and also I'd like to say that relational safety is a concept that's kind of new for wives in early recovery. And so Hope for Wives has a whole podcast on it, and that's episode four. So relational safety is, we'd like to offer that resource if relational safety, you're not real sure about what it is. But I'd suggest she ask herself some questions like, where is he attending to me differently and with more intentionality? And where am I feeling more seen and heard? Is she feeling prioritized? Is she seeing consistent kind behaviors or behaviors that mirror the fruit of the spirit, even when there's conflict? So these kind of questions will help her determine if she's feeling safe enough with him to reengage. And then there's a third group of wives, and they are completely blindsided by his compulsive behavior because they've been consensual in the bedroom. They've met frequently, and she often feels like they're really good friends. So for these wives, what I've found is they come to me wanting to navigate what is healthy sexuality, and she's trying to tease apart her body's response versus an emotionally mature response. And again, it's totally her choice when to reengage. And that's where I kind of leave it. When does she feel relationally safe enough? And also, I just want to reiterate what Pam and Lachelle have both said. What is very important in this process is lots of self-care, lots of self-compassion, especially if shame comes up, guilt comes up, things that are just not true, but you're feeling them. Because self-care, self-compassion, and also a paradigm shift for her to realize that she has rights in the bedroom too, and that God designed sex for both people. It's not person-centric. It's for a mutual experience, and it's not just orgasm-centric either. Orgasm is a perk, but it's not the purpose. You know, emotional connecting and intimacy.
That's so good. And you know, as I'm listening to you, Bonnie, I'm hearing a theme among those three different groups, I think. And you can tell me if I'm hearing this right or not, but I hear that whether they're in that group that was, you know, neglected sexually or relentlessly pursued and punished if they didn't comply, or somewhere in between, they're looking for change. They want to have the felt experience that there's something different than before. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's so good. And that's totally possible because we're called to grow in maturity and to become more and more like Christ. And I believe our bedroom experience can grow into more and more Christ-like experience where we're loving and nurturing and supporting.
Yeah.
And that's the new life.
You threw out a phrase in your answer. I'm about to throw all of y'all a curveball. Sorry, but it was bound to happen at some point. So you got it. It's okay. I promise. So you talked about emotional maturity in regards to sex. And as I've worked with couples, one of the things that I've found is, you know, a lot of people very mature in so many areas, very successful in their careers, great parents, you know, can carry on a meaningful and substantial conversation about current events or whatever. But in the area of sex, they're just really stunted in their emotional development. And it's like they can't engage sexually unless they go back to, you know, revert back to adolescence. And what I've seen, and I'd be curious to hear from any of you if you've encountered this as well, is that, you know, not that I would ever, ever, ever wish the experience of sex addiction, betrayal, trauma on anybody, but I have seen that for many couples, it is a catalyst for them to actually grow into a mature sexuality that is far more fulfilling than anything they had prior. Anybody want to pick that up and run with it?
Well, I think it brings up, I just heard this really great speaker a couple weeks ago at SILS, and he said, the repair is always better than the rupture.
She's talking about.
And I feel like, and I feel like that lines up with that, is that it is one of the, you know, those unexpected gifts that comes from betrayal, is when two couples really do start to do that level of intrapersonal work, and they start to discover those places that they have picked up distorted thinking, like Pam was talking about, or even not knowing that they have a voice in the bedroom. And I can tell you that's true in my own story. Like that, the immaturity that was the initial template of our, you know, sexual relationship was very young. And so it's like, and exactly like you said, there's just not a lot of space to talk about those things. Like Bonnie's other podcast is an anomaly. And truly when it comes to what we're, you know, people are talking about. So I totally agree. I can see the shift and the growth and the opportunity for something that's so much better. So
thank you. Thank you. Wonderful. Okay, let's stay on the sex topic, because I've got another related question from another partner. Again, this is one I've heard many, many times. So if you're out there and you're listening, you're thinking, oh, that's me too. Don't think it's just you and one other person who asked this question. No, no, no. It's out there a lot. So the partner who says, hey, listen, after I discovered betrayal, I actually started having more sex with my husband, you know, and then there's a shame attached to that. The partner didn't say that. That's my commentary, because then she moves on to ask, what's wrong with me? All right. So, ladies, I'll toss that to you.
All right. Well, I'm stepping up to the plate, and then the other two can come after me.
All right.
And actually I heard this just this week as well. So mm-hmm. It is not an uncommon experience. At no. First, I would ask her, you know, I put that coaching hat on and say, in what ways does this feel wrong for you? And just help her gain insight into herself about where this is coming from. But honestly, there's nothing wrong with her. It's actually a fairly common experience, like I just said. And typically it's a short-lived season, and sometimes it can go longer, but typically it's a little shorter lived. But shortly after discovery, many wives desire sex with their husbands. And I believe that there's a couple of underlying factors, you know, from the multidimensional partner trauma model that APSATS work from. It says that after the initial discovery, a betrayed partner is typically seeking safety and stability. And so having sex with her husband is a safety seeking behavior.
Yes.
She's trying to reestablish. I know this is your area, Jake. She's mm-hmm. trying to reestablish that attachment. Mm-hmm. And unconsciously, I love this part because I love neuroscience. unconsciously, her body may be compelling her towards this too, because sex and orgasm release oxytocin, which is the trust and bonding neurochemical. So another factor is that after discovery, she now has an element of truth. And so that feels validating. Some of the things that she felt, now she knows is truth. It also may help her feel closer for a season because of that validation. But sometimes right after discovery, the person with the problematic behavior becomes very vulnerable. And this might be a space of emotional connection that she has not had with him in a very long time. And so she feels safe enough to have this sexual engagement because she's finally got a connection she hasn't had in a very long time.
Absolutely. So. Totally. You know, and actually just to, I want to build on that last one that you said, because there's really, I believe there's really something to it. Biologically, when we begin to share our secrets with another person, vulnerably share our secrets with another person, that activates the attachment system, which sex is a part of the attachment system, which is why it's so dangerous to share your secrets with a coworker of the opposite sex. I'm going to start confiding in them and all that. That's how so many, right, affairs begin. Well, it's biologically activating that system. And I think you're exactly right, Bonnie. The vulnerability that often accompanies, you know, that moment of discovery, as awful as it is, it can activate that system. Lachelle or Pam, anything y'all want to add on this one?
I was just going to agree with Bonnie that what I've heard several partners say to me is that the mask has come off and I finally feel like I'm seeing my husband, my true authentic partner, the love of my life for the first time. And I want more of that. I want more of that emotional intimacy, because that telling somebody your deepest, darkest secrets and errors and mistakes is so vulnerable. And that vulnerability is attractive. It's very attractive. Yes. So this is very validating. I'm really glad to be part of this conversation.
That's so good. Very, very good.
Hey, I'm going to go 90 degrees, because I don't know that I came in with all that neuroscience knowledge when this part unfolded in my story. My thought process was, okay, this was like not understanding sexual addiction, right? Or I knew the betrayal had happened. I did not really understand sexual addiction when it first started unfolding, because honestly, my husband didn't even want to identify as an addict. I don't think that even happened for at least 7 or 8 years before he was finally like, yeah, maybe this is a problem. But I found myself going to a state of being like, okay, if this is what you want, I'll be available all the time, anytime, when you want it, to circumvent that pain from ever happening to me again. And so it was still safety, but it was from a place of attempting to control the outcome. And so while it wasn't quite as beautiful as what Bonnie was talking about, like that neuro attachment and all those beautiful things, which maybe they were in there. I can't really remember all of that, but I will say that part of what I was going after was, I will just be available. Then you have no reason to go back and do that thing. And I do see lots of women fall into that early on. So I thought I'll add that 90 degree in there for you.
I'm glad you did, because I was going to bring it up.
Okay, good.
which is that can happen. You know, I'm not saying that I absolutely agree with everything that Bonnie and Pam said, you know, but I've also seen what you're describing, Lachelle, where a partner, and again, it is part of safety seeking. It's just maybe not, you know, ultimately going to be the most effective safety seeking strategy of, maybe I can help manage his addiction. Now, I've never heard a partner say it that way, but when I reflect it back to them that way, they go, ew. But it also resonates with their experience sometimes. So
I'll just add my voice, because I want to validate anybody else who went, oh my gosh, that was me. That was me. Before I knew that this was an addiction, And we got some really bad advice from professionals. And I thought, oh, maybe I'm the one with the problem. And maybe I'm the one who needs to change and open up and be more active and more available. And it, so there, I wasn't really trying to control it. But I really did think I had a problem. And so I tried to morph. And that was, again, an immaturity, because I was putting on a mask that wasn't authentic. It's not really anything I wanted to do, but I did it because I thought there was something wrong with me. And later on, as things morphed, I think I did do it to control. So I again, I want us to give ourselves grace if there's any women out there who feel any kind of shame or embarrassment or regret or remorse. Please give yourself grace, because we don't know what we don't know.
That's exactly right. Thank you, Pam. So
and
good.
If I could just add, so I'm reflecting those that my most recent answer is from my most recent D-Day. My first D-Day, and the reason I became a Christian sex author, is because I took his blame. And I thought, if I'm the problem, I can fix this. And then I'll never be hurt again, because I can fix it. But in the meantime, what happened is I was researching and doing all the physical stuff and the spiritual stuff. God shifted something in me to help me see that sex is for me too. So that I started to have more voice in the bedroom, even though I didn't know about his addiction was way underground. But for me, I did it initially, but it shifted me too.
Wow. Thank you so much. Wow. That's great. Thank y'all. I know this is a such a sensitive topic, and any listeners who, you know, you're hearing this and you're like, this is hard to look at. I want to encourage you, all three of these women, I know they work with partners, and you could reach out to them and work with them or someone they know, someone on their team, someone they know, they will help you get connected and find a safe place to process through this. Because maybe you don't know. Maybe it's not black and not white. Maybe it's a little of this and a little of that, right, thrown in. So but just know you're not alone. Yeah. Okay.
Oh,
go ahead,
Bonnie. Offer,
yeah.
I know you want to go on. One more thing. I just want to offer.
Go ahead.
We do work with wives, but we understand, we all understand, that men are betrayed partners too.
Thank you.
And in that population, sometimes they are the spouse with the lower drive. And that in itself brings a lot of shame because of cultural stigma and that kind of thing. But I just want to acknowledge, I know you're out there. And I know Jake probably has some great resources for you as well.
Thank you, Bonnie. That's awesome. Thank you. Yeah. So we'll pivot again to another topic, another hard question. My husband is sober, but still not connecting emotionally. What the is wrong? What is going on here? That's not the way I, you know, wrote the question down, but that was the way it came to me. So yeah, ladies.
Can I just say how common that is? Yeah. And as someone who in her prior marriage was married to an alcoholic, in my experience, all addicts go through this. People in my groups know how to finish this sentence. What do addicts medicate? Emotions. And emotions are the boogeyman. Emotions are the monster. And so they can't process their own yet, much less deal with probably what's happening with mirror neurons. Jake, you could probably speak to this. They can't deal with their own emotions, much less anybody else's yet. They have to learn, and I always quote you, skill and capacity. They have to develop new skills to deal with their own stuff, their own feelings in their body, in their minds, and the thoughts that come with it. And then they can better deal with other people's, but it's an absolutely must have. That doesn't excuse them. They've got to learn how to do this if they want to be in relationship, if they want to save this relationship that they've caused damage to. They've got to make it a priority to learn. And I'll tell you what my husband's therapist told him. I love this. he said, get your goalie gear on and get ready to take some pucks. You can do this. So if any of the betraying partners are listening, you can do this. I want to encourage you. If my husband, who's, you know, very John Wayne, former Marine, you know, man's man, he learned how to do it. And they can learn how to do it too.
That is so good. Thank you, Pam.
That's my soapbox.
I like it. That's a good soapbox. Yeah, it makes me think about just this week I was working with a couple, and this wasn't really a new thought, but maybe the way it all kind of came together in my head was a little bit new for me. This particular, and I'm not saying, I want to make clear, this is not true of all addicts, sex addicts, and all betrayed partners, but I've certainly seen this many, many times where this particular, it was the husband who had betrayed and multiple addictions, and he presented, he also military background, very strong, you know, had it together. I don't think he's a full-blown narcissist, but some very strong narcissistic defenses coming up, overly confident, cocky, performative, and his wife was so sick of that, right? Just she's tired of it. She's had all that she wants, and she's like, I just want to see you. Just show me you. Just speak from the real you, not from this role or this bit you're playing or this part. And it dawned on me, asked him a few questions about his family of origin, his childhood and stuff. That's an absolute legit request and need she's asking. But he wasn't keeping his true self from her. Because it's not like he knew who he was and he was hiding it. He didn't even know who he was.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not like he was really feeling one way and he was saying he felt another way. That happens too. But sometimes it's not a deception or a hiding thing. It's a, they don't even know thing. Y'all seen that as well?
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Yep. Absolutely. There's a lot of image management that goes on in some families. I speak from my experience, my husband's family. His father was a doctor, he's very prominent in the community. They were very rigid churchgoers. So they had to present this image. And emotions weren't allowed in the family. And so he was never validated emotionally. Neither was I growing up. I mean, that happens, but for different reasons. So he didn't know who he was. And that was part of his recovery journey. And that wasn't something I could really take part in. That was something where he had to do that part on his own and then come back and share with me. What really helped us there, I just really recommend check-ins like Phanos, where you develop that language, that vocabulary. It's a brand new language, and really just, you know, looking at the feelings wheel and really getting into that. That was a really good exercise that helped him tune into what do I feel, what do I need. And you know, so I think it's such a growth journey.
Thank you so much. Well, ladies, as we start to think about wrapping this up, first of all, I had a lot of fun, so we need to schedule and do this again. We could do this a few times. There are plenty of questions out there. But what I'd like to do is I'd like to give each of you, again, I'm going to throw you a little bit of a curveball, an opportunity to leave like a parting pearl of wisdom, parting bit of advice, maybe something that was really meaningful to you in your own story and in your own journey, or something you've seen be very powerful for the clients you work with. To offer that to our listeners. And so we'll go around in the same order again. So Lachelle, why don't you kick that off?
I think that the pearl of wisdom that I would extend to our listeners would be that there's a couple things. One, you're not crazy. And two, you're not alone. And so don't let those two lies take you out and hold you hostage. Find the people, find the resources. You're already finding a resource if you're listening to this podcast with AppSats. So keep doing that. keep pursuing those things. And the feelings of being crazy will start to dissipate, and also just feeling alone. So
thank you, Bonnie.
What I'd like to offer is that if you are new on this journey, fresh to a discovery, I know that that pain is visceral. Mm. And there's actually neurochemical reasons that pain is truly felt. But I want you to know that God won't let this pain destroy you. Because I know in the worst of it, I felt like I was being sucked into a black hole. And I go back to Isaiah 43, where it talks about God won't let you be burnt up. Your clothes won't even be singed. So God will protect you. It may be painful for a while. It will be, but you won't be destroyed. And you will come out the other side.
Thank you, Bonnie. Thank you. And Pam?
You know, you've been disempowered by deception and betrayal, but I want you to know that you have more power than you realize.
You have
autonomy. You have authority. Trust your gut. If your body is telling you what somebody else is telling you, whether it's me or a provider, a therapist, a pastor, a friend, your spouse, and it doesn't sound true, probably isn't. And keep searching and don't give up. Decide that you are going to turn this tragedy into your own triumph. If I did it, you can do it too.
Oh, thank you. Well, ladies, thank you so much for making some time to come on Betrayal Recovery Radio. It has truly been a pleasure to have you all. I know this will be a great resource.
Our pleasure too.
Yes. All right. Well, y'all have a great time. And listen, listeners, you know, all of the links to get in contact with these ladies, to hear their podcast, find their podcast, all in the show notes there below. Check them out and the other resources they have. You will definitely be helped by it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jay.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Betrayal Recovery Radio, the official podcast of APSAT. If you've received help or hope from this episode, I encourage you to share it with someone you know. If you've not yet done so, please subscribe to our podcast on your favorite listening platform. Thank you for joining us. I'm Dr. Jake Porter, and you can always email me directly at jake@apsats.org. I'd love to hear your ideas, questions, or comments about the show. Until next time, keep choosing to use your voice and live your values. It's good for you and for this world.